With God's help, I pray to God that He may grant me wisdom and understanding to be able to relate God's truth, the truth of the Torah, the truth of Judaism, to this esteemed gathering. Firstly, I'd like to thank the New England Committee to Defend Palestine, and especially Mr. Amar Jabroun for giving me this opportunity to be able to speak here, a privilege to be able to speak here, and may God protect Mr. Jabroun and all who stand up for the truth and for what is right. May God give us all strength and courage that we should be able to carry through His truth and sanctify His name. The topic which we are going to address is unfortunately a topic which is a heart-rending topic. It is about the falsification of Judaism, the subjugation of a people, many wrongdoings that have been perpetrated for over 50 years. And unfortunately, universally, the world does not even know or comprehend that there is anything wrong in what is being done. And people look at this as a religion, as Judaism, and therefore we are going to try, with God's help, to shed a little light on this tragedy, on this falsehood, and maybe with God's help, give people the opportunity to further study this issue and see the truth. There is always, when I speak about the subject of Judaism versus Zionism, I feel obligated to divide this issue into two topics, basically. I like to address the Jewish audience and the non-Jewish audience. For the Jewish audience, I feel a very strong obligation as a Jew that we stood together on Mount Sinai and accepted from God His Torah, and we formed a bond with God as one. And we were told by God that each one of us is responsible for this fellow Jew. We are all bound together to watch the Torah and not stray even an iota from the teachings of the Torah. So I feel an obligation whenever I come to any community to educate my fellow Jews to what is right. And at the same time, I feel I am required, not I feel, but I know we are required by God, and we have been told by our teachers that we are required to speak to the non-Jew and let him know the truth, as I say, in order to sanctify God's name and to take away this terrible sacrilege that is being perpetrated in the name of God. Let us start. Let me first, there's going to be a few different issues here that will have to be addressed. There's the first issue of the difference between Judaism and Zionism, how they are contradictory. Then there's the issue of about how Jewish people, how they coexisted with the non-Jewish people throughout the generations, especially with their Arab neighbors. And then we will have to discuss, of course, the problems and whether there is a solution, if there could be a solution to what is going on today in Palestine and throughout the world. The first issue is, what is Judaism? What does it mean to be a Jew? The subject, of course, is a very deep and long subject. We're just going to touch, as I say, on the perimeters, on just the main issues, in order to give one an opportunity to go further and study all these subjects. The Jewish people basically And actually the Muslim people, the Arab people, are descendants of Abraham. But the Jewish people continued from Abraham to Isaac and Jacob. And they accepted upon themselves that they will accept God's teaching, the Old Testament, the Torah, which was given to the generations later, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, on Mount Sinai. On Mount Sinai, the Jewish great-great-grandchildren of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob stood, the whole Jewish nation, and at that time they stood together and accepted, they said to God, Na'aseh v'nishma, we will do as you tell us, and then we will hear. In other words, they accepted without any clauses, without any type of deals with God. No matter what God says, they were ready to accept. They will do the Torah. They will accept the Torah upon themselves. Then it says, even afterwards, later generations, the holiday of Purim passed, when the Jewish people knew already what the Torah, what the Torah was all about, and the many laws and commandments, which is very complicated and maybe hard to do, and they accepted it upon themselves again. In the later generations, they said they accepted it with happiness upon themselves to watch the Torah. So, in order to be a Jewish person who is a true follower of Judaism, one has to follow the Torah without straying in any which way from the teachings of the Torah. What is the Torah? The Torah is the written law. This is the Old Testament, the books of the prophets, and the oral law. When Moses took the Torah from God on the Mount Sinai, he accepted the written law, which everybody understands is the Old Testament, but he also had the oral law given to him. In other words, God explained to him the many different aspects, the many different parts of the written law that was written in short in the Old Testament. It was explained in detail orally to Moses, to Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses our teacher, and this was handed over orally to the Jewish people. Later, generations later, it was written, it was called the Mishnayos, and later afterwards the Talmud. Now, I'm sure many of you heard of the Talmud. This was the oral law that was later written, but it was written, the Jewish people accepted upon themselves that they must follow this teaching. This is from Moses, this was given to Moses from God. So we believe it's the same requirement for a Jewish person to watch the Torah, the oral law, the Talmud, as it is to watch the Old Testament. There is no difference. And if one does not accept to watch the laws of the Talmud, then he is not following Judaism. Therefore, taking that a step further, the Reform, conservative movement, and so forth, according to the real Jewish teachings, they do not represent Jewish teachings. Now, that doesn't mean that a Jew who is not following the Torah is not considered a Jewish person. There is many levels of that. If somebody who is sitting, there's many laws that have to be followed in Maimonides, you can see, in the Shulchan Aruch, the law books. If a person is born to a Jewish mother, he is Jewish. But the teaching, the following called conservative Judaism or Reform Judaism, that is not Judaism. And they cannot represent Judaism in any which way. Now, of course, I took the liberty to say this because being that I'm a controversial figure anyway, and I'm going to speak about controversial subjects, and I'm loved anyway worldwide because of what I have to say about Zionism, so I figured I might as well just go ahead and say this also. Now, but actually that's not the reason why I'm saying it. I'm saying it because I feel responsible. We all feel, every Jewish person, as I mentioned before, is responsible one for the other, and it has to be clarified what true Judaism is. Just as Zionism is a falsification of Judaism, and we have to clarify and let Jewish people know that they should steer clear of Zionism, so we have to let the Jewish people know that we don't have one agenda. It's not an ideology that we're here for. We don't have some type of hobby. We are here because we're fighting Zionism because it is against God and His teaching, and so anything that diverts from God's teachings is prohibited, it is forbidden, and we must we tell every Jew that they are required to steer clear of it, and they have to serve God. God has given us life, and the only way to serve Him is following His holy teaching, which is the Orthodox teaching, and following the Talmud, and so forth, that has been handed down from generation to generation till today, from God-fearing Orthodox teachers. I'm saying God-fearing Orthodox teachers who will teach you the real truth. Once a person has to really put a lot of thought and effort to be able to find God-fearing teachers, that they should teach him, tell him which way he should follow Orthodox teachings and not Zionism and so forth. But if one puts an effort into it, he could, and prays to God, God will help him, that he should be able to come. It says we pray every day, but we pray to God that he should teach us. Every Jewish person is required to pray to God that he should teach us the right path to follow, that we should not, God forbid, stray. One is never guaranteed, even if he's an Orthodox, even if he's a rabbi or so forth and so on. Every person, till the day of his death, it has to be in constant fear. Our rabbis teach us from the Psalms, from David, King David, and so forth. It says that blessed is the person that fears constantly. It doesn't mean he fears somebody will kill him. That he fears that he shouldn't stray from the true path. Every day, every year, there's new subjects, new issues that come up, a falsification of the truth in every person's life, and everybody understands that. There's always issues that come up, and people get fooled by the media, by different issues, that a person thinks that he's doing what's right, and you'll find fighters the truth 1 year, 10 years later, they're on the other issue, the other side of the coin, in different issues. Why is that? Because nobody is guaranteed that he will stay with the truth. So we are told by our rabbis, Ashrei Adam, Mefachei Tamid, blessed is one who fears constantly. We pray to God, teach us your ways, and teach us the way to go, and then we have to search diligently to find the right way. And to follow the Torah truly, one has to follow a God-fearing Orthodox teaching. Now, we will get to the subject of following the teaching of the Torah. On the Mount Sinai, when we were given the Torah, God said to the Jewish people, you have to follow the 613 commandments of the Torah, and when you are following these teachings, you will be a nation of priests. If anybody who has followed the teachings of Judaism knows, it is very complicated. There's many, many laws. This requires a person to be 24 hours, 7 days a week, under a yoke of serving God. That is why it says in the Old Testament, "V'atam tiyuli malechus kehanim v'goy kadosh." You should be to me a nation, a kingdom, of priests and a holy nation. Because we are required by God not just to come into services in the morning, once a week, or even every day. No, constantly, every day, throughout the day, we have to think of God. That is when we are a covering on our heads, the Yarmulke means Yerei Malka, fear of God, to remember we have God over us and serve Him constantly with all our body and soul. That is what it means, a nation of priests, because it simply is priesthood. And aside, many people always say, so the Jewish people look down upon other nations, look down upon other people. That is not true. When we say the chosen people, we don't mean chosen, as a great rabbi from London once said to me. It doesn't mean chosen to oppress other people. That's not what the word chosen means. It means chosen by God. He gave us the Torah that we have to serve Him as priests. To be, as the word of the rabbis, and he expounds upon this, the Rabbi Shamshon Rafael Hirsch. Rabbi Hirsch is from the German around 200 years ago, 200 odd years ago, who was the leader of German Jewry. And he said one of the reasons that God spread the Jewish people out amongst the nations is to be a light unto the nations. Being that we are following the Torah, we're trying to emulate God, means that we are trying to emulate God in His compassion and doing good and so forth and so on. And that is what we are chosen to do. So the truth is that a person does not have to be Jewish in order to serve God. That's totally false. In fact, the prophet Elijah, Elio, says in his book, Tana de Eliyahu, he says that not only that every human being, whether it's a man, a woman, a child, it doesn't matter what nation, it doesn't have nothing to do with it. Any human being, as long as he is righteous and does not sin, he does not commit idol worship, he does not steal, does not kill, and the righteous person unto God, then he will inherit the world to come. Everybody, human being, was created by God. And so we believe you can serve God and be totally righteous and a holy person if you are not Jewish. In fact, we discourage people from becoming Jews. Why? If that is the way that you have to get closer to God, then obviously we wouldn't discourage somebody from becoming Jewish. We discourage people because of two reasons our rabbis state. One is that being that we are in exile from God for close to 2,000 years, we know that God is the controller of the world, and any suffering that we Jewish people suffer is from God to remind us to repent and so forth. And therefore, there is many times that Jewish people suffer. So we tell the Gentile people, the people who are non-Jewish, we say, why would you want to become Jewish when you are putting yourself in a position to suffer metaphysically from God? It is better to serve God in your position as a non-Jew. So we discourage people from becoming Jewish because then they will be putting themselves in a position of suffering. Another reason is because there are many, many commandments, and once a person accepts upon himself this priesthood, this obligation of watching the Sabbath, of eating only kosher, and so forth, then after the time period, he may find that the novelty wears off, and he may decide that it's too hard to continue watching every commandment of Judaism. And then he'll be considered a sinner, even though he's a very righteous person and he wants to serve God, but he'll just desecrate the Sabbath once, and he'll be considered a sinner. So we say to the person who wants to accept Judaism, we say, why must you do this? If you're going to do this, then you may end up being a sinner, while today you are a righteous person. So we say you can be righteous unto God, and you don't have to be Jewish. That is, I like very much to clarify that, because, like I said, many times we've been approached that Jewish people look down upon other people. That is totally not true. And of course, much of this reason that people look at Jewish people in this view is obviously because of Zionism, which we'll talk about that, but that is very unfortunate. But because of the fact of Judaism, that is not why the Jewish people look at any other person not properly. Now, when the Jewish people accepted on Mount Sinai the Torah, God gave them, he said, I have a holy land where God's spirit, so to say, God is all over the world, but God said his spirit rests specially in the holy land, in the land of Israel. And he said, I would like you should stay in this holy land, and you should serve me in this holy land with extra commandments of giving tithes of the land, giving charities, special charities of the fruit of the land, and so forth. Because you are being a nation of priests, I want you to reside in this land. But God stipulated, in order to reside in this land, you have to be holier than average. And if you will sin, then you will be expelled from the land. Actually, in the Old Testament, if somebody studies the Old Testament, you will find that many times there's verses, for instance, that the land will regurgitate you if you will sin in the land, if you will desecrate the land, if you will defile the land. Actually, the Tanakh also means if you will defile the land. The land is holy, just as a human being is very sensitive. You cannot put take an organ from somebody else that doesn't. The body will reject this organ. So the holy land is a holy land that will reject sinners. The Jewish people, when they accepted the Torah, they accepted to go into the land of Israel. They accepted God's stipulation that we will only be able to stay in the land if we are holy. And if we will sin, we will be sent out. The prophets say, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, all the prophets speak about how the Jewish people eventually, they went to the land, and then God kept on warning them that they are not being holy enough, and that they will be sent out. And eventually, the Jewish people were sent into exile. Nobody from the Jewish nation could refute that. This is what it says in the books of the prophets. The Jewish people were sent into exile. And the Jewish people, entirely, they accepted this from God. They accepted this punishment from God lovingly. meaning that we knew it as a bitter medicine. God sent us into exile. Why were we sent into exile? Not because we were physically weak. Not because our military was not strong enough, but simply because we had sinned and God said, you cannot stay longer in this land of mine. And you can find, it's very simple, if you will look in the books of the prophets again in Joshua, you see that Joshua went seven times around the wall of Jericho, of Jericho, and the wall sunk. You see that the taking of the land was done through miracles. It was a spiritual happening. And again, there was the Maccabees that the Zionists always like to use as their symbol. The Maccabees were eight people against thousands of people. It's physically impossible. They like to compare themselves to the Maccabees. It is ridiculous. They have phantoms and spiders and whatever you want, and the Maccabees were eight human beings without phantoms, without any type of tanks or anything. So how were they able to defeat thousands of people? Of course, the non-believers and even the Zionists, obviously, they would just say, God forbid, that I don't want that they will want to dispute the veracity of what says in the Old Testament and the books of the prophets. But we believe in what the prophets say, and we believe in God. So we know how are eight people able to have such a military victory? The answer is because it was a spiritual. It was a miracle happening from God. Only because God wanted us to win, we won. When God wanted us to win, sometimes it was a miraculous happening. Stones fell from the sky. The walls of Jericho fell. Sometimes it was through military intervention, but all because God gave the power for them to defeat the enemy. When God didn't want us to stay in the land, no matter how strong our military was, we lost. We were defeated and we had to leave the land. And the Jewish people accepted this. Not because of our physical weakness, we left the land, and not through physical strength will we ever be possibly able to return to the land. This is the Jewish teaching. So when the Jewish people were sent into exile, the Talmud states, basing it on a verse of Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs from King Solomon, God said, You are forbidden to try to return the land. He swore, he put the Jewish people under oath. He said, I am sending you to exile because of your sins. Do not try to return. You cannot fight the hands of God. He said three, he gave us three oaths. He said, one, you shall not try to go up en masse to the land of Israel. The Jewish people are forbidden to go up en masse. As individuals serve out their days in the service of God, they are allowed. But to go up en masse, they are forbidden. To try to end exile, we are forbidden. That is the second oath. And the third oath is we are forbidden to take up arms against any nation. We are forbidden to revolt, to rebel against any nation. This is what God swore the Jewish people, the idea of exile. We accepted this upon ourselves. We accepted this lovingly, like I say, as a bitter medicine. We know it's what God wanted. It's for the good of us. And God said he wants us in exile to break our loneliness, firstly, and secondly, in order that we should be a light unto the nations. What is Zionism? Well, before I'll go into that, let me end with what we are waiting and hoping for. We are hoping for the end of exile. We pray, every Jewish person prays for the day when the exile will end, when God will redeem us from exile. So what does that mean? We are waiting for a state of Israel? No, it doesn't mean that. Totally wrong. It means we are waiting for the day, and we pray for this every day in all our prayers, when God's name will be known throughout the world, when every human being will accept the fact that there is one God and that he controls this world, and everybody will willingly accept to serve him. That is the day we are waiting for. It is something which is really is very hard to understand. And one of our great rabbis constantly says, he compares it, he says, just as a blind man you cannot explain to a blind man the difference of colors, so you cannot explain to anybody today who is living in the world as we see it today, in this materialistic world, you cannot explain what will happen the days of Messiah when the Messiah comes. It will be a metaphysical happening, something which we cannot explain, just as we cannot explain color to a blind person. And that is what we are praying for. Not that we will go and try to convince the Arab people by trying to shoot them or whatever. No, it will be a day when everybody together will recognize the one God and serve Him together peacefully. Then we will all go up together and serve God in Jerusalem. That is our hope. It says that God will create, will rebuild Jerusalem from fire. The Jewish people say this in their prayers, the day of the remembrance of the destruction of the temple. It's a, we say, every Jewish person who prays says, God, you destroyed Jerusalem with fire. We are praying for the day when you will rebuild Jerusalem with fire. And this is what we hope and pray for. It says, we also call on Abdullah Echas, Rasa Tisan Sabwesh, it will come the day when all the nations will together will form one band and go up and serve God. Not that we will alone go up and serve God. All the nations together will do this. This is what we are hoping for. Until then, we are not going to take any action whatsoever. No military action or any action. We are forbidden even to use extra prayer to try to bring about this redemption, this end of exile. And of course, it is impossible anyway, because you cannot shoot yourself out of a metaphysical happening. If it is from God, the exile, you can't shoot yourself out of it. It doesn't make sense. This is what Judaism is about. Exile, servant of God. What will this be do in exile? We have to constantly be, to emulate God, to be a picture of holiness, that all the nations should be able to learn from us how one should be a righteous human being, how one should be a compassionate human being, how one has to serve God and be what God expects of us. What is Zionism? Zionism started basically around 100 years ago. The truth is Zionism was born before then. Around 250 years ago, there was a movement of Jews called the Reform Movement, started by Moshe Mendelssohn. These people saw Jewish people suffering, and for many other reasons of theirs, they decided that the Jewish people stand out. We dress like we do, with tails, the way we do, we stand out, and maybe that's why they're suffering. They didn't accept that we are suffering because God is making the Jewish people suffer to remind them to repent, as it says in the Jewish teachings. They decided we're suffering because we're physically weak, because we are standing out for the nations, we don't assimilate. So they created the Reform Movement, and they refuted much the teachings of Moses. They said it wasn't the godliness, it's not from God, it's from Moses, and so forth. So what they said was, you know what, we will pick and choose from the Torah what we like, and we will assimilate, mix with the nations, and then we will stop suffering. It didn't work. For over 100 years, they tried this movement. It didn't work. They didn't stop suffering. As everybody knows, in Germany, when Hitler came, it started in Germany, where they were the most assimilated. And he said, if your grandparents were a Jew, they threw you into a concentration camp. It was a sign from God, we believe, just to show that that is not the answer, to refute God, to go away from God. Follow God, don't try to be smarter than God. But anyway, that was around 250 years ago. Zionists were the great-grandchildren of this movement. They were non-religious Jews, totally estranged from Judaism. They didn't follow Judaism whatsoever. Most of the Zionists, like I say, were non-believers, many of them, in God and in the Torah, and they definitely were non-religious people. They didn't follow the Torah. So they looked and they saw, look, Theodor Herzl came along, he said, he was at the Dreyfus trials, and if you know, there was a soldier who was accused of being a spy, a Jewish soldier, and it was a blatant anti-Semitism. He wasn't a spy, and people blamed him. So Theodor Herzl was a reporter, said, look, why are we suffering? This person isn't religious. I think he was not religious at all, or maybe very just slightly religious, but I think he wasn't religious. He said, why are they suffering? He's already a Reformed Jew. He did everything he could not to suffer, according to their theories. Why are we suffering? There must be another solution. Well, if that didn't work, there's another way of doing it. We will isolate ourselves. We will make a military. And we will therefore be able to stand against the anti-Semitism. We'll make our own country. Well, let's pick a good country. They picked Uganda, if you know. And then they wanted to try other things. They realized, though, that the Jewish nation will never follow, even though they were brilliant people and they had this beautiful theory, but the Jewish nation as a whole refused to go along with them. They weren't interested in this new movement. So they decided they'll pick Palestine. Palestine, after all, is the Jewish dream, what every single Jew, as I say, prays for constantly, to return to God, to return to His Holy Land. And they knew that they will be able to calm the Jewish people and confuse them into believing that this is what they were hoping for generations, to return to the land of God. And they'll just tell them that this is what the dream is, the Eschaut of the Geula, the beginning of redemption. All the rabbis in the time at the inception of Zionism were in total opposition to this. They said, this is false. Look at who's coming here to teach you to bring about the redemption. These are non-believers. These are people who are totally estranged from Judaism. They are not followers of Judaism. Do you really think that this is what is the beginning of the redemption? And it's totally wrong, and you're forbidden to even try to do this. So the rabbis were in total opposition to Zionism. Universally, they were in opposition. From every land, we have writings. You can look at our website, which is www.nkusa.org, and you can see we have these many books, compilations of the writings of all the rabbis universally who stood in opposition. Mishkanos Haron is one of the books. There's many books that are compile the different writings of the rabbis who were in opposition. The greatest leaders worldwide, and almost totally all the Jewish people were in opposition to Zionism. They didn't let Zionism encroach into the Jewish communities. They were so against this Zionism. And if they were able to hold in that day, the Zionist movement. But unfortunately, later, by the Holocaust, which is a whole story which the time does not permit me to get into how Zionists were involved. I know you have other speakers who spoke about how Zionists were involved with making deals with the Germans in order to get the Jewish people to come up. I will touch about certain issues of that, how the Zionists tried every trick to get the Jewish people to go up to Palestine. But anyway, by the Holocaust, when many of the Jewish leaders were killed, then the Zionists went to the Jews and they said, look, you followed Judaism as you understood, you followed your Jewish leaders, but look what happened to you. You suffered. You see, now try our way. There was a Balfour Declaration. We have land. We'll give you land. Come up and come, and you'll be able to stop suffering. The Jewish people were at a weak moment, and they got a lot of people to follow them to go up to the land of Israel. And that is how Zionism started to grow. So Zionism basically, the teachers of Zionism were out to transform Judaism, not just to take a land. They had another issue. They wanted to transform Judaism from religion, from a spirituality, into a godlessness, into a secular entity, void of godliness. They wanted to create Judaism, to take Judaism, like I say, from a spirituality, which was a totally other issue, into a nationality and a secular type of existence. And they unfortunately did a great job of that. They went and they took from the Sephardic lands, they took up all the Jews through trickery, through creating anti-Semitism, because they came up to Palestine in the beginning of the 20th century. They came up there, and when they came to Palestine, as you know, there was a problem, because it wasn't an empty land. There were people living on that land. So what were they going to do with this problem, the Zionists? So they said, it's a land without a people, for a people without a land. And that is what they went around saying to all the nations. And of course, they didn't have what we have today, internet and all these other ways of communicating. And after all, the Arabs were third world people. Maybe they were cannibals. Who knows what they were? So they decided that's what they'll be able to sell. And they said, it's a land without a people, for a people without a land. Of course, they were very connected, the Zionists. These were secular Jews who were very connected with the Western leaders. And they were able to usurp the name of Judaism for themselves and to say that they're the leaders and to convince the world that this is a land without a people and they should take over this land. When they went up there, these Zionists, to the land of Israel, of course they had to have a lot of people to come along with them. So, as I say, first, I was thinking about it, the time of the Holocaust when they got there. First, when they went up in small groups, I'll regress a little bit. They went up in small groups in the times of the beginning of the 20th century, and there was a large Jewish community there. There was a God-fearing Jewish community in Palestine at the time. These were led by Orthodox Jews who, as I say, through the generations, they went up to live out their lives in the service of God and the Holy Land as they were allowed to, according to the Torah, as individuals, with no aspirations to take over the land. They just wanted to live their lives, and they lived peacefully with their Arab neighbors. And we have many documentations of this, but they lived peacefully. And I have not only from the land of Palestine, but they lived in all the Arab lands, they were living peacefully together with the Arabs. And again, I'm not going to be able to touch on all these subjects on our website, you can see that, but just a few, just to touch upon this, we made a video of an Iraqi Jew who wrote a book called Ben-Gurion Scandal, Noam Gharavi, his name is. He spoke about how they put bombs in the synagogues in Iraq in order that the Jewish people should be afraid, thinking that the Arabs are doing this, and they should run up to one of the tricks that they did to go up to the land of Israel. Now, I asked him, this is not in his book, but I asked him, tell me, how was your relationship with the Arab people in Iraq? He said, the relationship, he said. When I was a youth, he said, we would walk on the street, and the rabbi would go on the street, and the Arab people would bring their children to kiss the rabbi's hand. He said, we would build sukkahs. Sukkahs is a house of a holiday season for the Jewish people, where we would hang fruits, hut that we would make for 7 days, and we would hang fruits in them. He said, the Arab neighbors would come and hang fruits because they thought it would be blessed. They would take that out after the holiday season, that the fruits should be blessed. I could go on like that. I have many other instances that it's just cases where if you would ask Arab people from the older generation, they'll tell you how they lived with Jewish people. And there's documentation of that. And I would like to ask that anybody who knows stories about the existence of Jewish people with Arab people, if they can be so kind as to email us about this and write it, because this has to go down in history. It should not be forgotten. I have a report in Yemen, which is a very powerful story. In Yemen, I traveled to Yemen a few years ago, and Yemen, there was a whole vibrant Jewish community there, as there was in the other Arab lands, but the Jewish people living coexisting as brothers together with the Arab people. And of course, at the beginning of 1948, in that time, they made a Operation Magic Carpet and so forth. The Zionists brought up the Jews to the land of Palestine. But till then, they were living a very large Jewish community. But it became emptied almost after the 1948. Recently, though, there were still people living in the hills that the Zionists never got to. And Yemen was closed for many years. Yemen was closed because it was sort of like a communist country, whatever. It was closed off from the United States. They didn't allow people to go there. Now, but the Yemenite government allowed us to go visit them for many years, Mr. Ray Kassi, because they knew that we were anti-Zionists. We used to go visit them, and we saw that these people in the hills that we would go visit every year were living as brothers together with their Arab neighbors. They would come in. I went personally. I traveled from one neighborhood to another. They had tribal wars, and they would make checkpoints and not allow one tribe to the other. And the Jewish people, when I would travel together with other Jewish people, they always let us through. They just took one look, Jewish, right through. Because, after all, we weren't part of the tribe. They knew we were not fighting with them. And they would come in, I would go visit a house, and then the Arab neighbors would come in and sit down. They don't even knock, they just walk in, sit down, started chewing gas, smoking these pipes. And this time we would sit together, it was unbelievable. But then after, a few years ago, the Zionists decided to take out these remnants of Judaism that is living in Yemen, because they needed cannon fodder, and they decided, they say one of the reasons is because they need cannon fodder, but we believe because they wanted to take these Jews and rip out the Judaism from them, which they constantly do. So they decided to take out these Jewish people when the doors were opened in the last few years to Yemen. So they started putting advertisements all over in the Jewish neighborhoods how the Jews are being persecuted in Yemen. Now, we were going to Yemen every year. They weren't being persecuted. We saw this. And they kept on writing this, but who's going to listen to Mr. Ricasse after all? So this is what they wrote. And then they unfortunately were successful. They took up these last remnants of Jews. Some of them, most of them, they took them up to Jerusalem. They promised them houses in Jerusalem and so forth. And really, they just put them into non-religious areas. And they ripped out the remnants of Judaism from them. Well, after this happened, around a year ago, there was an article in one of the Zionist papers in the Jerusalem Report that I have here. And it says about one of these Yemenite Jews went back to Yemen. And it says, I can't, unfortunately, the time doesn't permit me to read the whole article, but it says that when they went in there, one of the Arabs approached them and said, this Jewish fellow who went back, he said, oh, my brother. And the reporter who went along with them from Jerusalem said, why are you calling him a brother? So he said, because let me just give you this, I'll quote it because it is just too touching. In remote, this is written in Jerusalem Report, issue March 11, 2002, author Naftali Hoger. In a remote corner of the Yemenite desert, Muslim Arab tribesmen and their Jewish Israeli brothers continue a tradition of extraordinary coexistence. Ya Achi, my brother, here's my mom, exclaimed Masood emotionally, pointing to the woman in the creased photograph. Masood is a Muslim from the Al-Mazir Abyad tribe. He lives in Wadi Amla, an oasis in the remote desert region of northern Yemen, close to the Saudi border. The woman in the photograph, an unlikely mother to Masood, is Kadia Zabari, a Yemenite Jew who emigrated to Israel a few years ago. The brother who he is talking to is Yaakov Zabari, her son, who went to Israel with the first group of immigrants in the years in August 1992 and settled in Rehovot, south of Tel Aviv. Yaakov, sitting in the sand during a recent visit to his former homeland, explained the family relationship with tears in his eyes. Masood and I are the same age. When Masood was born, his mother did not even have enough breast milk, so my mother nursed him as well, and that's why he called him his brother. This was the relationship of Jewish people with the Arab people. I could go on and on and on, but the time does not permit me. In Palestine alone, we had the relationship between Jewish people. I will quote just one report, one piece of evidence that we have from a great rabbi who created the girls' school movement in the United States, Rabbi Baruch Kaplan. May his memory be blessed. He passed away a few years ago. He said, quote, when I was in Hebron in 1929, well, what I'm going to quote here is that he was in the yeshiva, it was designed to constantly try to portray the Arabs as haters, ingrained haters of the Jewish people. Now, we know that is false. But they always try to bring proof to this, so they always bring the story of Hebron, that in the 1920s, before Zionists created their state, the Arab people hated the Jewish people. And you see, in Hebron, there was the Hebron massacre in 1929. So you see that it's obviously because the Arabs just hate the Jewish people. It must be a different religious conflict between Jews and Muslims. The religions can't get along. Well, I'm going to tell you the story of Baruch Kaplan, who he was a student in Hebron at the time, in 1929. And he writes about how he lived in Hebron, and what the situation was, how the Jews lived in Hebron. He says, when I was in Hebron in 1929, there occurred the tragic massacres of over 20 yeshiva students, great scholars, plus another 40 members of the Jewish community. I would like to describe the error that has circulated in Jewish communities. A horrible error that accuses the Arabs in Hebron of being murderers who attacked the Jews simply because the Arabs were bad people. In order to correct the record, this error must be corrected. The Arabs were very friendly people, and the Jewish people of Hebron lived together with them and had very friendly relations with them. They worked for Jews, and Arabs got along just fine. And everybody got along just fine. To take just one example, I used to have the habit of walking a mile or two out of town, all by myself, to visit a tree that was believed to be the tree where our patriarch Abraham met the three angels as described in Genesis. I especially enjoyed visiting the tree in the summertime. Along the way, I would talk to the Arabs, though it was mostly using our hands because I didn't speak any Arabic. Interestingly enough, no one in the yeshiva ever told me it was dangerous to go by myself among the Arabs. We just lived with them and got along very well. I have also seen a letter from the Grand Rabbi of Gera Hasidim of those days, Rabbi Avraham Marcha Alter of Poland, regarding his trip to the Holy Land during the days when people were talking about emigrating to Palestine. He wanted to find out what type of people the Palestinians were, in order to be able to advise his people whether to move there or not. He wrote in his letter that the Arabs were very friendly and fine people. Therefore, it is necessary to set the record straight about the accusation that the Palestinians were terrible people, killers who liked attacking Jews. He goes on to say, I won't read the whole letter, he goes on to say how the Zionists came up in short khakis, he writes, with guns around 20, I was just here, says, in quotes, I wish I could quote the whole thing, he says that the Zionists first came up at the time in 1929, the Zionists had a slogan arguing that the Western Wall of Jerusalem was a Jewish national symbol. Of course the Arabs disagree with this, considering that they had control for over 1,100 years of their location. Now, the Jewish people had the permission from the Waqf over there to go pray constantly by the Western Wall, and there was no problem. The Jewish people had never had any disagreements or any problem with praying by the Western Wall, but then the Zionists came, and they decided to say that this is our national symbol. They put advertisements in papers, and it goes on, so forth, that they made a verse saying, just we say, Shema Yisrael, hear, O Israel, God is our God. They would go and they said, hear, O Israel, the wall is our wall, the wall is one. this is quoting the chief rabbi of Rome, Isaac Cook. And this began the conflict between the Zionists and the Arabs by the Western Wall. Because then, what I'm saying here is that the Jewish people lived together in peace and harmony with the Arab people, and especially in Palestine, they lived in peace and harmony. What happened was, after the Zionists came, the Arabs started seeing that what's going on is a new movement. These Jews are coming up here with some aspiration to take over the country. They're buying houses here not because they want to live as the other Jewish people have done for hundreds and hundreds of years. They have a plan here. They want to take over rule of the land. So they found the Jewish people, they looked at them as a threat to their existence. And that's when the animosity started, in the beginning of the 20th century. And that is what brought about this animosity. Not because they hated the Jews. They were afraid of this plan of taking over the land. And the agitation started in that early period. He speaks about further in his letter, Rabbi Kaplan, about what happened, that these 20 people came, Zionists came into Hebron and with bicycles, with guns, and the rabbis called them. Rabbi Epstein, he says, his rabbi called them, and they said, come, we want to speak to you. And they refused to go to the rabbis. They had no respect, as they do today. They have no respect for the Torah authority. Eventually, the rabbi went to speak to these people, to these Zionists, and he said, and they begged them to leave, and they refused to leave. He said, what are you doing here? They said, we came to protect you. So, I'm quoting them. They responded that they were coming to protect us. We cried out, woe is us, God have mercy. And then he said, then they didn't want to leave town until it was too late. These arrogant cowards, I'm quoting them again, these arrogant cowards only ran away when the local leaders of the Arabs called for a mass meeting of the people of the surrounding Arab villages. But it was too late. The Arabs got organized and the Mufti called on his people to be ready Friday night when the yeshiva would be attending prayers. At this point, the yeshiva was alone against the Zionists. But the Arabs did not know to distinguish between us and the Zionists. Sadly, they attacked and killed some of our people, including the great scholars, the Shmuel Rosenhaus. The issue is that the Zionists were not the Jewish people here. There was a Jewish settlement who were totally living in harmony and coexisting with the Arab people. They babysat each other's children. We have witnesses for that and so forth. In fact, what the Jewish people, the Jewish community did was they created a Bestin, an Eber Haredes. They created an Eber Haredes, a whole court system in order to be able to fight the Zionist movement. And Rabbi Donenfeld, he went to meet the king of Jordan, and he went with some Dr. Dahan, who was a diplomat who was coming to represent the Jewish people, a Jewish fellow, which was, again, look at our site, NKUSA.org, because it's very interesting the story how he was deemed a threat to Zionists, because he was a diplomat who was connected with the Western leaders, and he was going to show the Western leaders that the Zionists are falsely representing Jews, and that there is a whole Jewish community, thousands and thousands of people in Palestine, who do not hold the Zionists and the Zionist leadership and the Zionist ideology. But they killed him. The Zionists killed him, and it's in that court book. The documentation that the Zionists killed him, Haganah killed him. Anyway, after Rabbi Zonnefeld went to the king of Jordan later, after he passed away, the next chief rabbi in 1947 was Rabbi Bishinsky. Rabbi Bishinsky, I'm just going to quote, he wrote a letter in 1947 when he saw that the creation of the State of Israel was imminent. So he wrote a letter to the Secretary General of the United Nations on late success. He says, the Jewish Orthodox community of Jerusalem, comprising 60,000 souls, objects to the plea of including Jerusalem in the Jewish state and or its residents becoming automatically citizens of the Jewish state. Our command that Jerusalem be an international zone under your protection with full autonomy and its citizens be free citizens of the international zone of Jerusalem. We beg of you not to take any action before receiving our memorandum, which is being sent by email, Chief Rabbi Bishinsky. The fact is that he saw it was being imminent, the creation of the state. He said, I have 60,000 people under me. We do not want to be included in the Jewish state. How ironic. You have the Jewish whole leadership with 60,000 people, which the Jewish community wasn't much larger. They didn't want to be included in the Jewish state. What's going on here? They want to be under the Arabs and not under the Jewish state? So understand, what does this mean? Because it's not a Jewish state. It is a farce. It was Zionism. It is the sheep in the clothes of the wolf. The wolf in the clothes of the sheep, actually. And that is what you have. This is what Zionism is. Zionism is a false portrayal of what Judaism is. Now, there's many other speakers, so therefore, of course, I cannot elaborate on all that, and I didn't want to get into the issue, which you hear and you see constantly, what the Zionists perpetrate in the name of Judaism. Because being that I have so much to speak about the Jewish subject, I wanted to leave this out, but of course I'm going to say that the Jewish people hurt constantly, and we are embarrassed, and the pain is to the depth of our souls what the Zionists are doing constantly to the Palestinian people in the name of Judaism. Their actions, every action that emanates from the Zionist state, what they do, they subjugate the Arab people, they threw them out of their land, and so forth and so on. This is all in the name of Judaism. God forbid. You should know that the Jewish people around the world hurt, and we do not support them. We are in total opposition. Because as I say, we are forbidden by God to have the state. We are forbidden to subjugate a people, to oppress a people, to steal land. It is all against God's teaching of the Torah. It is all against emulating God, of being compassionate. It is against the essence of what a Jew stands for and what he is. Their actions is Zionism. It is not Judaism. Just like you cannot pick an atheist and make him the Pope, so you cannot pick the Zionists and make them the representation of Judaism. It's ridiculous. Again, I'm going to end. The instant is not ending. I'm going to say that in order to understand the difference, why it is so important to understand the difference between Zionism and Judaism, is because for three reasons. One, first of all, to sanctify God's name that is being so desecrated. Secondly, because it should take away the anti-Semitism that the Zionists are creating, and for their good. The more there's anti-Semitism, the greater they grow, because they grow from Jewish blood, and they're a factory for anti-Semitism. That is why they like to, what they're doing around the world. I cannot unfortunately get into these Swiss reparation money and whatever they do around the world, the ADL, all their actions that they're doing just to create anti-Semitism. But there's we have to understand, we want to take away anti-Semitism and save blood from being spilled by clarifying that it's not Judaism. The third thing is because in order to create a solution, to be able to come to a solution to this problem, one must know what the problem is. The problem is not Arab animosity to Jews. The problem, the core problem, for all the bloodshed for over 50 years is because of Zionism. Judaism and Jews live together in peace and harmony, and we could and we will live together. The God tells us in the Torah, the Ruach Sitzach, if somebody goes against God, they will never be successful. Zionism will eventually end. Our prayer is that it should end speedily and peacefully in our day. That is what our constant prayer is. And you should know that it will end. It cannot exist because God says it will not be successful. In order to look for solutions, we have to know that what the problem is. It is Zionism. Once you understand that, then we can know, first of all, in order to accomplish, we have to know that God is the one who brings the solution. We all have to pray to God constantly for this. We should all, I urge you all to pray for the end of the Zionism, speedily and peacefully nowadays, and then we can go further from there. Our hope is for one day, which will happen soon, that we will all be able to sit together and serve God in peace and harmony, that we will pray, like I said, that we should return the land, the total return of the whole Palestine, not just the West Bank and here and there, the whole return to... The whole Palestine, including our Kurds, our Aqsa, everything should return to the indigenous owners, the proper owners, the right of return, all to the Palestinians under their control. And eventually, we know it will come the day, and we pray, well, all the nations recognize the God, the one God, we all will serve Him together in peace and harmony. Amen.
Thank you. My grandfather from the first time in the religion, telling my rumors and hugging each other, the structure of Jewish. And they haven't seen each other in 19 years between the years of and the so that's a story I really need to do. So that means that my question to you is about which is kind of question, which is basically that question. And I think in every human heart, good and evil. And there's this projection of anti-Semitism in times when faces with the same qualities and they try to go over each other, they feed on each other.
Well, Zionism is one of the master plans at the time of its creation was that they said one cow in the land of Palestine is worth more than, I don't know, 50 Jews or some other people. All the lives of Jews in Europe. And I have many different quotes here and different things that your hair would stand up to if they said that they didn't want the Jewish people of that to come up. From the, they realized that the people of the world are compassionate, the human people, and that they will have pity on the Jews and they will want to give them a land. So the more there's Jewish blood, a rabbi in London, I always like to quote him, he says, many things grow from grass, many things grow from the ground, some things grow from water, Russians grow from the air. He says, Zionism grows from Jewish blood being spilled. Then if there's more Jewish blood spilled and people have pity and they look at that they should rightfully get a land. And also then Jews, there's anti-Semitism, people run up. So it's a win-win situation. If they can create anti-Semitism in Europe, then people will run up here. If they get $1 billion from reparations, then they win. They win on both sides, of course. So they create. They have the ABL, they have all these organizations that create anti-Semitism. And if anybody tries to go and stand and speak to another from any other nation, we go to speak to any other leader, they'll accuse us of being self-hating Jews, or if you try to make peace with any other nation, because they want this anti-Semitism. It's one of their plans. So that's a very important issue to know.
Hello, thank you very much for your talk. My question to you is, could you tell us a little bit more about the fact you know, particularly of the Orthodox, the ultra-Orthodox, the so-called religious Zionists, and how they fit in, and what are they experiencing from what you're doing to them?
Well, it's very important that you should come in. There's many various levels in Jews and the fighting and the in Zionism and anti-Zionism. It's not one picture. Most of the Jews throughout the world who were Orthodox following the teachers were anti-Zionists. And the truth of that is, you will find in the land of Israel, even the Shas party, the ones who are part of the government, they only went there because, if you ask them if they're Zionists, they'll tell you they're not, because the teachers were not. What? They said they only went there because just the Palestinians have a representation, they have to have representation. The proof is that they don't have any flags, Israeli flags on the yeshivas, almost all the Orthodox, and they do not send their children to the military. Now there is a few of these settlers, these are the ones who follow Kahana and so forth, Kahana from New York. He went to Mary Yeshiva. All the Yeshiva students, when in my days, I remember, we didn't look at him. Everybody understood that he's a rebellious person who doesn't follow the teachings of his rabbi. Now, these people have these extreme people who go to the settlement, so everybody thinks that the Orthodox Jews, unfortunately, the more Orthodox Jews are, the more Zionists. When the fact is, every Orthodox Jew knows that we are forbidden to have the state. Unfortunately, being that people, the Zionist propaganda, which is very important for people to know, they try to portray the Arabs as anti-Semites and wanting Jewish blood. That's why it's important for Arab people to get up there and say, clarify immediately, we are not anti-Semitic, we don't hate the Jews. It's very hard, yes, they will suffer for us. We do not hate the Jews, we just, what Zionism is doing is wrong, and we don't want Jewish blood. Because many Orthodox people today, although they are in opposition, total opposition to Zionism, but they are afraid that they will be murdered, because that's what Zionists keep on saying, they'll be murdered the second the Arabs return to the land. So you have to clarify constantly, we do not want Jewish blood, we can live peacefully, and that is the point. But the Zionists that you see in the West Bank and all these settlements are the few. They're not the picture of real orthodoxy. The strong Zionists are extreme, that do not belong to the ideology of Orthodox teaching.
Yeah,
unfortunately, of course, like I say, the Zionists use of pariah. They write the text from anything that they could, even though they know, like you say, the Christians, many of them, well, there's many who have compassion for the Jews, but there are many who are just looking for the Armageddon. They know that the Jews will go up there, they say, then what will happen is the Jews and the Arabs will kill each other, and then there will be the Armageddon. So that's how they're trying to support the Jewish people, because they want to, but the Zionists don't care. As long as you send them your dollar, and you're in support of them, so they want that. But these people are being misled, the Christians. We went out and demonstrated in Washington when they had this big rally of the Christian, the Christian movement. And we tried, but of course the mass media doesn't cover it. In New York we had 30,000 people on the streets that was covered by any television, and yet they didn't cover it. The New York Times, Post, any of these mass media, they don't cover it. But we try to clarify and to enlighten the Christians that they're not doing the Jewish people a favor, and it's all wrong, and that it's against God. I mean, how could it be if they're principled people, they're people of religion, how could they support this oppression of the Palestinians, you know, and so forth, and against the Torah teaching and so forth. So we're in, of course, opposition to that.
Thank you very much for being here. I was wondering, self-expression, what percentage of the Orthodox people agree with you and will constitute your side? I think your greatest job in this world is to get the Orthodox people to reject overall.
Right. Like I said, unfortunately, the portrayal of the Arabs as willing to kill the Jewish people has created a situation where you have a large percent of the Orthodox community who accept the teachings of their fathers and of their teachers, that the Zionism is in total contradiction to Judaism. And still and yet they say, we cannot give up the land because of the fear of being murdered by the Arab people. But the situation is, if they knew that peace could happen there today by the dismantlement of the state, as it should be, then in one second they would give up the whole land. So, like I say, the percent of Orthodoxy that is in opposition to Zionism is a great percent. But it varies in how much they will stand up against Zionism and what the situation is and so forth. Many, unfortunately, don't see a solution because of the fear of being murdered. But Zionism is, like I say, quite clear in the Orthodox teachings throughout the world that is totally against the Torah.
There's a gentleman who just wants to count a 1989 with the delegation from the American Arab Interdiscrimination Group. And he stayed in the refugee camp. He talked to Jewish representatives who were in the refugee application. He talked to look at Jewish parts of both Israel and Palestine in terms of what was going on there. And there is a picture of some of the names of the Sinatra of the pressure that the Palestinians were under. It was pretty graphic and quite disturbing. About 4 years later, he was back to Palestine for purpose and was given a